soft, quiet dreams that bend to let me cut the time and stretch out back. I make the dry eyes roll and wet eyes crossed while I'm in deep breath, sleep or twilight zones. I take the freight elevator, press fast forward so I can find ease.
Yes, the geeks were right. Welcome to Eardrop if you're continuing to listen to my conversation with Juan Montoya from Kyoto, Japan. We were just discussing dystopian technological kind of concepts and extending life and what have you. So thank you for listening. And Juan, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Great. Okay. So we will – well, you were officially on Professor Blastoff.
That was so weird.
and now we're just two guys chatting. I'm not sure how many people listen to this app, or but hopefully our conversation was compelling enough. A few people stumbled over and wanted to hear. You were getting into the technology might already kind of exist, and we've talked about it before on the podcast where certain species of like sea anemones live forever, and there are things that are kind of like bionic, or they do have a longer life expectancy. And it seems strange. Like, was that in evolution process of, say, like a sea turtle, to be like, guys, we got to live a little longer. We're not getting the most out. Like, they didn't do it with technology. And who knows if their life expectancy was ever, 30 years, then 50 years, then 70. And then they keep ramping it up. But we seem hell bent. And just, I think partly because life keeps getting easier. I mean, if you watch an old movie and just how rickety their cars were, we kind of shudder at that. Go, ooh, boy, that. With no padded seats. I mean, they used to be on a wagon and you just maybe had a spring and that would be pretty good. Like, wow, out of the spring, my wagon's, well, it's a lap of luxury now. And to go to where we are currently, where, I mean, we have no hard bumps we take. There's really no jostling. We're just comfortably in padded shoes and seats everywhere we go. But what beyond that, what technology do you think is really going to pioneer moving into the next realm of us living conveniently and comfortably into, say, like, 150 years old?
Let me think about it. Because I'm actually not an expert in technology. I studied technology management, so not...
Okay.
I don't know that very much about.
Well, let's go over that a little bit. Give me some more specifics on just what is that, like we were previously discussing, just kind of the handling of knowing how to curate technology, so to speak, and say, like, this is probably not something we should allow out into the world. This is a ray gun, and we've seen how those go. So let's keep this safe.
I'm sorry, what exactly is the question?
I just want you to elaborate a little bit more on. Technology management, and is it the equivalent of keeping ray guns out of people's hands, or is it a little bit more is it managing what technology we allow to have out in the world, or is it managing tech, like how we use our current technology?
Yeah, well you could see, I mean, if you try to define technology, it usually would be like taking science and applying it to solving some practical problem. And in the case of technology management, it's like not taking science, but taking technology. And this is very mean. It's actually taking technology and trying to get some economic profit from it. So most of the discussion is basically about how you can like take technologies and make money with them. And there is like at least a few people that are not so much into actually the money making side of the equation, but actually into how to improve the ethical and the responsibility we have in developing technology. Mm-hmm. So for example, I actually am very interested in all the ethical discussion about how to develop technology. Mm-hmm. But what I actually study of my like PhD program is all about money, how to actually make money.
Oh, so you're on the other side of it. So technology management. So going a little further in that, technology management and how it relates to making money from it. Is this trading? Is this investing? Is this, you know, how are we making money? And how are you going to be, you know, employed in doing so?
If I'm entirely honest, I don't think nobody knows how to answer that question. Because part of the problem you have is that there's a lot of these, well, the government and companies developing technologies, and they have all these huge amounts of patents and money they spend researching. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the time, they actually don't get money back from all these investments. You have like some crazy company that takes what other companies develop it and copies or actually licenses those technologies legally, mm-hmm. and I don't know, do some branding or another type of innovation, and they actually get more money doing that than actually just from the technology. So it's a mixture of technology and like marketing and other kind of business-based stuff.
Oh, I see. Okay, so like, you know, there's the Amazon Fire Stick that is a USB you can put in your computer, and then you basically have, you know, a smart TV, I think, or you have the equivalent of like the Amazon shows. But now at Walmart, they're selling like this knockoff. I forget what the name of it is, like a Wooma stick or something like that, but it's just been panned by critics. But maybe if it's a little cheaper or it's marketed a little differently, you're saying that is technology management, of just kind of not exploring or identifying new technology, but just different ways to kind of market them?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay. So then beyond that, so your area of expertise when you're done with your studies is going to be more in that realm of not necessarily reverse engineering stuff, but understanding that, like, oh, you have a really cool thing here. You have an awesome app, but you've named it terribly or you've given it weird functionality. So we're going to make our own, but it's going to be a lot more user-friendly. It's going to have a catchier name. That's kind of what you'll be doing?
Exactly. If you take all the glamour from the from what I study, it's exactly that, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. So you're fascinated with technology, and you've got to be more on the cutting edge of what is out there. So maybe this would relate more to your expertise as well as just kind of general philosophical thoughts on it. But say something like, so like in Black Mirror, they call it the grain, where they're like, you know, and I've always, for like 10 years of doing stand-up now, I've always been fascinated and talked about, you know, the implications of having a chip in our brain and that sort of being the final frontier of where people may draw the line. I was just going, yeah, I went along with the swipe thing. I went along with the touch screen. I went along with the Google Glass even. But no, this thing that you're implementing into my person, where yes, I'd remember everyone's name and phone number and directions everywhere because it would just be in a little hard drive, great. But no, I don't want that. Say it is invented. They have a grain. And I've invented it. I've called mine the nub. Bad name. The design looks stupid. My commercial just has like a simple incision inserted here. Wait 2 weeks for this. Pull out your own stitches. Log in. You're ready. And you guys look at that and go, that's horrible. It scares people. It's a stupid name. It's called the nub. Is something like the grain or my beloved nub, is that going to ever be for the consumer, in especially here, like on a capitalistic frontier, where there'd be competitors, where there'd be several manufacturers, and how would you get in, and what would you do to make it better?
Well, it's extremely futuristic.
Yeah.
But trying to think about it, let me try to think. It's so difficult. Well, would you use implant yourself with some of that grain stuff?
I'm glad you've asked. See, what we do with the nub is you can control your online library, your music, your photos. They're all at the blink of an eye. With a handy handheld remote you can attach to your keychain, well, you can navigate through everything in your life. Schedule a dinner party, just say it out loud, and it automatically inserts itself into your daily calendar. Want to remember someone's face? Scroll through your up to, 10 gigabyte, database of names and faces. That's enough names. That's enough space for 1 million names. You're never going to meet a million people in your life. So we'd do stuff like that. That's where the nub's coming from. It's just remembering your memories, people you've met, keeping charge of, like, basically what a smartphone does now for you. It's just in your head and a little easier to access.
And I'm sure some people will use something like that if you are able to market it good enough. But the real question would be if actually big part of the population will use something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's at least from the point in time we are now in history. If you try to see that, it seems so difficult to sell that kind of technology. it's too invasive, too intrusive.
So that's thing. It's the invasive nature of it. But like, would you get it if I told you that everything your phone could do, you could speak out loud, it would, and you could even just put your finger up to your ear so it looked like you had, like a Secret Service wire implemented in your ear or something. So it didn't make you look crazy like you were just wandering out through public talking. But you could bring up every face, every person you'd met, keep your schedule together, look through all your photos, send them to a printer, print them out, all without having to hold anything. You'd no longer have to. And you could be holding a conversation with someone and then in the voice in your head be sending a text to someone else. You could really multitask. Would you do it?
In my case, I would definitely do it. But I don't think I'm that common of a case. I just love technologies. I would probably get anything you can, like any chip you can put in my head. I will.
Really? But you seem to kind of respond to the hermit a little bit. The idea of existence, and so that you're kind of a juxtaposition of both, I guess. You're a little bit of a duality there, of like more so than wanting to. I didn't get the sense that you wanted to be a hermit, but I didn't really also understand like how full speed ahead you are with technology. You would do it. You would get the nub.
I would probably get it and try to see how can you use it in like in your daily life.
Here's the catch though. Here's where I see it being a problem is, now you can, people are already experimenting with like GoPro sort of first person, and then After Effects in like a horrible tsunami, or they just did this. I just saw this ad the other day on this computer where they, or sorry, a TV where they brought it in and made it look like it was the window behind an office. And then they showed just daily life happening outside, but it was actually on the TV screen. But people would come in to go to a job interview. The person would, interviewing them would have their back to the window, which is actually a TV. The person would be interviewing, and then the TV would play, a comet coming in and destroying the whole city. And people would see that coming and get up and freak out and start running to the door. And we see those things on like, a GoPro where someone's riding a bicycle real fast and then an explosion happens or whatever. And it's fake. But imagine that being sent to you in your nub, and now the world you're seeing in front of you, you have no concept of reality anymore. The nub has altered your reality and you're seeing explosions. You would have the equivalent of like severe, I don't want to say schizophrenia because that marginalizes what that is, but a mental illness that severely altered your perception of reality. Now, how do you like your nub?
That is extremely creepy.
So creepy. I don't,
is there any chance that you are into Japanese animation? Because if you are, you should watch animation called Ghost in the Shell. That's the famous book, Ghost in the Shell.
Ghost in the Shell?
Yeah, for example, some of the references in The Matrix are taken from that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it's a lot of the discussion that you were saying, for example, that you, some of the characters in this animation are cyborgs and they have like their own digital brains. And the issue is that actually, okay, when you alter the, like the nature of your brain, like you are not able anymore to be sure that what you are seeing or listening or whatever that your experience, you cannot be sure that those experiences are real or what is happening outside actually in the world. You can just be like some computer virus on time,
mm-hmm.
like feeding you fake impulses.
Oh, like being a, like a replicant, like in Blade Runner.
Exactly.
What about, so going back to what we were talking about in the Blastoff episode about the NSA and sort of monitoring and technology having the ability to do that, here's another thing. I've secretly made a deal with the government, with NUB, so that not only is it keeping all of your, you know, smartphone things, your dates, your schedules, your pictures, but it's also listening in on your brain. The technology exists to also get to understand your basic theories. When you're hungry, when you're thirsty, when you want to have sex, when you're a little down on whatever, and gets to know your mood. Now we replicate the nub and make a replicant of you. And then we make an army of people, and then I've sold it to the Defense Department, and they have plans to, like, either, I don't know, they make everyone into like soldiers or something, but it's something that I don't think anyone would be entirely comfortable with. How do you feel about your nub now?
That would be like the worst case scenario.
That's that, what I have that, in mind.
That all this technology gets used by the government for some military purposes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we're, NUB, that's what we're all about. Duplicity, dastardly maneuvers. We're real creeps, but making a lot of money. And that's so you as a technology management person could say, well, NUB is terrible. And you'd put out a lot of like, slanderous campaign saying how bad we are, and that you guys at your new place promise not to listen in on the brain, promise not to, it's entirely impenetrable. There's a firewall that won't let any, I don't know what they would call them, those images that could get sent in, like spiders or something like that. Like, oh, we won't let those GoPro spiders get in that augment your reality and give you the equivalent of mental illness. We won't let that happen. Like, our firewall's really safe. That's what you want. That's, you want the safe one that's not evil.
Well, that's actually, maybe the things I will be most interested in technology management one day is actually trying to discuss the concept of risk. Because one of the problems that you are like talking about recently is, I mean, we develop these technologies and sometimes sell them and use them in our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all based on the assumption that they are not going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
There is no like a chance for failure. And a big part of technology management that is actually like extremely interesting, but it's not what I research, but it's extremely interesting, is actually taking like the opposite stance and asking the question, okay, what happens when technology actually fails? Or But whether it fails because there is some like rate of failure in the technology that it is natural, or it fails because of like human cases that the use we give to the technology or the people who are in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Studying that is extremely interesting.
Well, yeah, it's hard to do beta testing on the human brain. I mean, at some point we have to move beyond, you know, it sucks that we do so much testing on animals, you know, rats. I don't know why people don't have more of like a compassionate sense to see that and go, oh, cool, we invented this little chip that can allow, oh, we had to paralyze a rat, insert this little chip in its head. Good for us. Like, we're terrible. It's disgusting. But to test these things eventually, it would have to be done on human beings. There's just no other way. Or even if you brought in a bunch of chimps and paralyzed them and put the chip in their head, it's still not the same. You still can't have a conversation. You can't. So that to me is going to be the hard, you know, you can do it now on people that will willingly be like, yes, I suffered an electrical shock, and it destroyed my nervous system. I would love to have that chip. I'm sick of being trapped in my body the way I am. So you can try now kind of on people electively, but you know, our planes crash. And I saw that they're doing experiments, or they're going to build a track in Texas to try out Elon Musk's high-speed like tube transfer system. It goes like 800 miles an hour. And you sit in like an individual car and it just shoots you to your destination. And so you arrive in, say, like LA to San Francisco in like 30 minutes, and you went faster than the speed of sound. That sounds neat, but the Tesla car, it wasn't like they all ran perfectly. There were a lot of them on the side of the road a lot of the time. If you're doing that with the tube transfer system, and then you're doing that with the nub in the head, I don't know how they're going to cross that frontier without a lot of sinister sort of missing persons cases that never get resolved. I just don't think you could do it on the up and up.
Something interesting here in Japan is that they recently have the nuclear accident here in Fukushima. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of discussion about, what was I telling you about, what happens actually when technology goes wrong? Because, I mean, if you develop all the, the way society works, on the assumption that it's never going to fail, that technology is never going to fail. When technology actually fails, you don't have like a plan B, or you don't know what could you actually do. So it's actually very interesting to study that here in Japan, to try to study risk and just technology failure. And in the case of putting something in your brain and trying to develop these technologies. Mm-hmm. One of the problems that we're going to have for sure is that, these technologies are going to be sold like to you, promising that they are never going to fail, that they are never going to be used, for example, by the government or by these companies for doing something bad, or that they are never going to fail in some way inside your brain and make you do crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you were actually like very genuinely responsible about developing these technologies, you should be honest and try to plan for the case where these technologies fail. What are we going to do, for example, the case that, is there a way to guarantee you that the government is not going to use these knob things in your brain? Or that when we are testing these technologies and people who decide, okay, test this with me, how are we going to guarantee that if the technology fails, what are those people going to get in exchange?
Yeah, whenever they approach, they always show like the guys in suits and very stern looking people approach the college kid who and develop some sort of like platform or software, whatever, design. And then they go, hey, we would like to talk to you about buying that. And the kid goes, I don't want to sell it. It's given in to be in the wrong hands. It could really be disastrous. And they go, well, let's talk more about it. And then they either steal it or they buy it from the kid. These are all movie things, but they buy it from the kid under the like agreement that this will not be used for harm. And then of course it just, well, this isn't what we meant, but of course this is what it led to. It always goes somewhere. If they could spy on you, if they could learn just a little bit more about people, have more control over them, monitor them at all times, it seems like they would. It seems like that's something they would do. So I like that, like the space program, like NASA does a good job of having, like you were saying, backup plans in place. Submarines do that so that you're not just trapped down there. Okay, we lost ballast. Here's our backup plan. Oh, we lost that. There's a second backup plan. So we're not just going to be trapped down here and get crushed by the ocean. And yeah, like the space shuttle does that, where like if say something wirelessly doesn't work or even electronically doesn't work, there are manual, like physical buttons you can push or knobs you can turn to get new, whatever, the thrust or whatever the hell you're looking for up there in space figured out so that you're not like, oh, I don't get it. This panel's not lighting up, so we're dead. And they go, no, now you got to go here, open this up, crank this knob 3 turns to the left, let the air go out. So how can you do that with other forms of technology, particularly, like even a pacemaker, things like that? You know, like there are things that are so invasive, but it seems like it'd be pretty impossible to give them several layers of backups so that they wouldn't cause harm or completely short out.
Well, there's a lot of like futuristic stuff that you could discuss, but there's actually a lot of, very practical stuff that we could actually do already, but nobody does this stuff. Just like, for example, in legislation and like having the right laws to prevent this stuff from happening. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of stuff that we can already do, but no country wants to do actually to assume that role of, okay, we are going to regulate technology in a way that keeps people like a plan B in case that technology is misused. Mm-hmm. So far is, there is some discussion happening, but it's for the most part, it's so slow and there is a lot of economical interest in this not happening. Mm-hmm. But there is so much that we could just do with having like better laws, and you don't need to actually go that far and think that, okay, how are we going to do with this with technology or some very complex system. Just thinking about how you could improve laws, and that is just writing paper. We could do a lot of to improve this.
Yeah.
So, for example, I avoid most of the discussion on the Professor Vlastov episode, but we are now in the other thing.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the issues you have, for example, with the NSA and the privacy in the US, there is a lot of issues with technology that people who study security and how to improve, like, that you are not tracked and that your conversations are not keep record and all this stuff. There's a lot of data that you can improve just based on technology, how you can like give users more control of that. But another part of that is just like the legal framework. And in the case of the US is that, there are some things that you can do with technology, but the basic problem is just that your laws are not working right at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what is your opinion on that, but essentially you have one agency of the executive power doing a lot of illegal stuff. there is no technology that you need to actually, some like crazy cryptic technology that you need to develop to protect users. You actually need is to put some like legal framework to limit the powers of these, of the CIA and the NSA. But nobody wants to do that, at least for very serious in the US. And that is actually just a legal problem and a political problem, not a technological problem.
There are a lot of governing bodies that can have a hand in it. Putting something into your body, probably like the FDA would have to get involved to make sure that there weren't certain residues of chemicals that were going to long-term, like, you know, eat away your brain or... going back to like something like the chip going in your head. I think that the necessity of something like that, though, will always bypass certain laws. So say that the Mars mission that keeps getting pushed back, if they realized, hey, people, we're not going to be able to communicate in the way that we'd like to, but if all the astronauts had these chips where they could send instant messages to each other without having to use their hands, they could be spread out a little bit on Mars and still have a visual reference of where the other person was. And we've decided that's absolutely necessary for this mission. So then they postpone it for a few years. They do their testing on missing persons. No, not necessarily. But they do their testing, their beta testing somehow. And then now that exists, and everyone's sworn to this classified, don't tell anyone, but of course word leaks out, and now the public knows there are human beings with these things, and they're so great. Your phone needs a battery. We're mining the crap out of copper all around the world. We're destroying habitats everywhere to make these stupid smartphones. What if you could minimize the amount of space it took up and the amount of material used to make them? Your brain will run them. You give off enough electricity to run this thing. Now all of a sudden everyone's like, I want that chip. I gotta have that chip. The astronauts are using it. They seem safe, and it's gonna be better for the environment, and I won't have to charge anything anymore. So that's where, if I'm in technology management, that's how I would advertise it. And then you'd run Nub right out of business. You just focus on more of like the positives.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. You can.
And if there's a demand enough, then it'll kind of circumnavigate what you were talking about like the legalities involved. You know, if everyone is kind of decided like, well, it's basically just a smartphone, but in your head. Okay, we can do that. And so you don't have to have a governing body determine whether or not they are legal or not. They can, you know, people will start traveling elsewhere. Like, I went and got mine put in Mexico, or I went and had mine done in Colombia or wherever. If people start doing it and there's money to be made, I mean, that's always going to kind of diminish or like minimize the need for laws to be passed and that sort of stuff. I think, I don't know, maybe I've gone crazy.
But I insist that it's just, I mean, so much that you could have improved just based on, I know that it sounds extremely boring when you talk about laws and politics, it gets extremely boring. But there is so much that could be done already just based on that, like to guarantee at least some risk management in case these technologies are used for other purposes that weren't the original.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. I think we could probably go on and on about this all day, but we probably should wrap this up, this little dose of an eardrop, and hopefully people tuned in and enjoyed it. And thanks once again, Juan Montoya from Kyoto. And is there any final things you want to get in, or shows you have you want to plug? Any merch?
I don't have plugs. I don't do comedy. But what can I do? Like, what can I advertise here? Get more Blast of T-shirts.
Oh, and you're at Marfel on Twitter, right? Do you want to mention that?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, people can follow me on
sure.
Twitter.
You're a pretty steady contributing Blastronaut on Twitter, and so you're up to speed on all the Blastronaut happenings. Well, maybe you can... do you have enough community where you are? I mean, do you have enough people around you? You've got, like, you know, school friends and stuff, but it's got to be nice to connect with some of these Blastronaut people and feel like you're you've got an extended net.
Yeah, for sure. Any Blastronaut that wants to contact me is free to do it. It would be very nice to find more Blastronauts here in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
We are not that many, but we have to to organize.
You're our foot team over there, so you gotta spread the word. I guess you're our only hope.
I have actually one question. I don't know if it's a good idea.
Okay, sure.
To put it in the episode or not? Is the hatch real? Was the hatch ever real?
Of course, if it
wins the show, you can like edit it out.
Yeah, people always.
But as a blaster now, that is my main question. Was the hatch ever real?
A hatch underneath Kyle's house where a scientist lived and transported himself into a different dimension? Absolutely. Why would we lie about something like that?
was it ever actually something underground?
Juan, you already got your one question. I apologize. I can't elaborate any further, but... That's a question that people are going to ask for ages, but you know, that's where we broadcast from, a hatch underneath Kyle's house. And I'm so alone, and I hope that the rest of my hatch buddies get back from the interdimensional world they've been shipped off to, and we can all reconnect and get back to normal Professor Blastoff's down the road, and perhaps we'll have you on again with the three of us. You're informative, and I like the way you think about technology and the world and such. So thanks again for all your support and help and stuff. I really appreciate it. It made it feel a lot less stressful to know that people were plugging away at it and stuff. So thanks a lot, man. I really, really appreciated that.
Thank you very much, truly. I get so nervous on this being on record.
No way. People are going to love your soothing voice. Thank you very much. It's so, really, oh, yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate so much the podcast. You have done an incredible work with Professor Blasto. He makes a lot of people happy.
Well, thanks a lot. And we're glad to do it, and hopefully we'll have many more. And thank you for, again, and your soothing, rich accent is only going to make people's ears that much more pleasant. So thanks again, Juan Montoya. Nice chatting with you. And this has been Eardropped, I guess. So thanks to those of you who are listening to this. Come see me on tour with Pinback. Come to the Junk Show. And that's it. We'll talk to you soon. So long.
So long.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. The wolf dead.